Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to this week's episode of Game Notes, your Utah Jazz podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am your host, Dave DeFore, joined as I am each and every week by my man, Tony Jones. What is going on, Tony?
What up, what up, what up?
You're in playoff mode. I already told you this. You came in hot into pre-show, so you know I know you're ready. Joining us this week, we a rare guest, a little crossover between the 77 Minutes pod and Game Notes, Mr. Tim Cato, who actually showed up late. So also in playoff mode, Tim.
Wow, Tim. That's
is that true?
Yeah, I'm asking. Yeah. I don't
is that
know.
Playoff mode?
I'm assuming it's because you were busy, like you were hustling. Working on a scoop.
Yeah, no.
Maybe you want to break some news here. Like, is there like any injury update?
I like that spin. No, not really any updates.
Yeah, he's got nothing. So I
Luka
guess
Luka will be healthy at April 25th at 3:27 p.m.
All right, you heard it here first.
Completely healed on that moment, not a second before.
What time zone?
That's still
Central
a mystery.
Time. Yeah, you stay.
Yeah, I got some more reporting time. To do.
That's right.
I got some reporting to do on that. Yeah.
So let's set the scene a little bit. Utah was a top four team for most of the season. Dallas has been a different beast since Luka came back from his ankle injury. And then post trade deadline trade for Spencer Dinwiddie and Davis Bertans. Luka gets hurt last game of the season and late in the third quarter in a game that Dallas kind of needed to win, but they also were going to have a week off. So I'm totally down with that. I mean, Tim, we've already talked about this on 77 Minutes. We all agree. Hey, yeah, you play basketball for a living, so you got to be out there to play. The stage is set. We know that Utah has been struggling lately, Tony. Late game execution has been a big bugaboo for them. Clearly, that's the thing that they need to try to solve right away in game one. They need to just come in, execute, do everything perfectly, and then down the stretch, take care of the basketball.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, theoretically, that's the goal for the Jazz. You know, it's, but this is a tough series structurally for them. You know, they have really struggled against small ball lineups. And in Dallas, not only do they go small, they go micro small. And, you know, they have shooting from five different spots on the floor. They spread you out, they get into the lane, they suck you in, and they kick to the corners. And it's structurally, it's going to be a hard series for the Jazz to defend. You know, so with or without Luka, you know, I really expect game one to be a bear for the Jazz. And, you know, to be honest, in game one, even without, you know, even if Luka doesn't play, I would slightly favor the Mavericks. You know, if Luka doesn't, here's my take on this series for the Jazz. I think that they are fully capable of winning a series against the Mavericks where Luka Doncic plays every single game of the series at a high level. And I fully think they are capable of losing a series to the Mavericks where Luka Doncic misses the entire series, because the Jazz are just that up and down. Their pendulum this year has swung that wildly in terms of how well they've played and how poorly they've played in chunks of the season. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they come out and play in this playoff.
Tony, I think you're right. I think you're right, and I think it's important to harp on the fact that Dallas can go small. They don't necessarily trend or gravitate towards that. Now, they're playing smaller since the trade because they played a lot of two big man lineups early in the season, Kristaps and Powell. Pretty much, almost exclusively, they were playing two big lineups, whether it's Porzingis and Powell and Porzingis and Maxi Kleba. But they have trended almost always towards a traditional big man, or at least a Davis Bertans as the backup center throughout the course of the post All-Star break, all their games since then. And we've just seen occasional looks where it's Dorian Finney-Smith as a super, super small center. Now, I absolutely believe that's a card that Jason Kidd has in his back pocket. In fact, he probably has it in his front pocket. He probably has it in his suit pocket. Like, you know, you just reach right in and pull it out. That's something they're going to need, and that's important. But I think Dallas will try to play a traditional big man in this series, with the smallest one being Davis Bertans, at least to start. That's how they're going to attempt to play. Dwight Powell had a couple good games against Utah. Even though drop coverage, you know, and the drop coverage that Utah likes to play, it typically does eliminate that role man. But Luka has been so good, and the two games that Luka played against Utah were Dwight Powell's two best games. And so, you know, if Luka was healthy this whole series, I think that they'd really try to push Utah's drop coverage with Powell on the floor and mixing in some Maxi and some Bertans. I think Luka's unavailability, and quite frankly, I would be shocked if he plays the first two games. I think we might be looking at game three, game four, even game five before he's ready to return. That changes things a lot, and that's why I think small ball might be a quicker adjustment for Dallas, just to try it, because Dwight Powell is just less effective if he doesn't have Luka setting him up. He's really good at finding the spaces and drop, but he also needs Luka waiting and waiting and just having the patience and timing and vision to be able to set him up for those chances. So my guess is they start Powell, and I think they go to Maxi Kleba as probably the first substitution of the game. And I think they give Maxi chances, even if he's missing, to prove that he can be on the court. But I do agree that small might be a necessary lineup adjustment that they go to, just because Luka's not on the floor. Now, the flip side, Luka's their best defensive rebounder. And can they keep Rudy and the Jazz off the glass if they're small?
That's the question. Now, I want to talk about Maxi, because I think he's going to be an important player in this series. His theoretical ability to stretch the floor puts him in an interesting position when you look at Utah, Tim. I mean, we know what happens to Utah when their defense gets extended, when teams can go five out. If Maxi makes shots, I mean, what sort of adjustment would you expect from Utah? Or is this just going to look like the Clipper series if he's out there canning threes?
Well, Utah used to put Rudy Gobert on Dorian Finney-Smith. Finney-Smith is too good of a shooter for that to happen. He's a 45% shooter in the corners. That's not an option. I don't think there's any way that Utah even considers that this series. Not with the way that Finney-Smith has developed. So it's going to be Maxi. It's going to be Josh Green. It's going to be these shooters that you dare to make shots, that you actually dare. And I think Maxi, hopefully with the time off, hopefully for his sake, he's more of the player that we're used to him being. But I've really struggled with the idea that he's going to go 6 of 12. I really struggle with the idea he's going to take 12 threes. That's, even as he's been a 40% shooter, a 41% shooter last season from three, he's never been someone to take that many, that high of a volume of threes. And if he isn't, then why wouldn't Utah just continue playing him like that, right?
Tony? Well,
here's the thing with Maxi Kleber. You know, there are 45% three-point shooters in this league. Let's take Dorian Finney-Smith, for example, right? Like, Dorian Finney-Smith, before this year or last year, before he developed, right, how much gravity did he have? So he could hit five threes in a game, but people were still going to give him dare shots because he didn't have gravity. Now, as Tim correctly said, like, there's no way you're leaving Dorian Finney-Smith open in the corners, because right now you know that that's going to be money. So that's gravity. So if you look at Maxi Kleber, you know, he could shoot 20%, but if I'm Quinn Snyder, I'm not leaving him open. I'm not giving him dare shots. So that it doesn't, the shooting percentage doesn't matter as much as the gravity matters. And Maxi Kleber has gravity, which helps the offense. Like, it opens up the offense because you know where Maxi Kleber is on the floor, especially when he's above the breaks. You know that he's a willing shooter, especially above the breaks. And you know that if, you know, his shot is feeling good, he can win a game for you with his ability to shoot the ball. So it's not so much, oh, well, you know what, Maxi Kleber shooting, you know, 30% or 35% or 25% or whatever. It's, oh my God, I'm not leaving Maxi Kleber open, you know, for an extended period, for extended possessions. So no matter what, if Maxi Kleber is on the floor, it's going to help your possessions. It's going to help your driving length. Like, it doesn't matter what Bojan Bogdanovic is shooting for the Jazz. His man's not helping off of him. And that's why when Bojan is out for the Jazz, Utah's offense, you know, as a whole, it doesn't work because the spacing isn't there. So when Maxi Kleber is on the floor, you know, Dallas's spacing is there. And that's the important part, more important than whatever his shooting percentage is.
Dave, you watch a decent amount of Mavericks since you come on our, you come on my pod. Mm-hmm. How many threes do you think Maxi took in a game, the most number this season?
Did he get up to six?
He took nine.
Okay, nine. All right.
He maxed out 6 of 9 against Chicago. How many threes do you think he took in games 42 to 81, the second half of the season?
It was not many. Number. His confidence has been way down. What, four?
He maxed out at 7 a couple times. Okay. And in the final 30 games, he never went above, let's see, I'm scrolling, and I don't see any games with even 60 next to them.
It's a little PJ Tucker.
Yeah.
Hesitant shooter now, and that's an issue. But he has to shoot to stay on the court, right? Like, if he's not going to take the shots, he can't play. What if he's not canning the shots? Like, it is just getting the attempts up enough where, let's say he gets up 9 shots. I mean, he's going to maybe play 22 to 24 minutes. They like to split a lot of those minutes. Let's say he gets up 9 shots because they're open. If he only hits 2 of those, is that enough, right? Like, where you feel like, okay, he contributed because he took the 9?
I think it depends if he's as dynamic defensively as we know he can be. And subsequently, the Mavericks are really frustrating the Jazz out of their preferred looks by extension of Maxi's time on the court. I think that's what it's going to revolve around. Does that track with you?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Tony, I want to swing it over to you and Donovan Mitchell. Number one, how worried should the Jazz be about his performance as of late? And in particular, the way that it seems as if his ankle tends to degrade a little bit as the game goes on. You know, his fourth quarters have not been amazing down the stretch. And I have to look at the ankle injury as at least part of that.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You know, I think that Donovan as a whole has been good this year.
Mm-hmm. I think absolutely.
You know, I think, you know, that he's had a really good year. And you know, that's kind of a tough comment to say because he's had a really bad year in terms of closing games. And that's where, like, if you're Donovan Mitchell right now, you're a top 15, top 20 guy, you've got to close games for your team. And that's the single biggest thing that he's going to need to do in these playoffs, is close games. And, you know, whether Luka is playing or not, like the Jazz are not blowing the Mavericks out for seven games. You know, the Mavericks are not blowing the Jazz out for seven games. So this series is going to come down to closing minutes. And a lot of
Dallas games was missing half their team in the Christmas Day game. And it certainly wasn't a blowout then.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so it's going to come down, you know, most of the series is going to come down to who closes the last 5 minutes better. And Donovan's going to have to make shots. He's going to have to make plays for himself. He's going to have to make plays for others, the plays that he has to make, that he makes for himself. He's going to have to make those shots at a high level. And that just hasn't been there for Donovan this year. So if you're a Jazz fan, it's fair to worry about that aspect, because I don't have any, you know, reservations about what Donovan's going to do in the first three quarters. You know, he might average 30 points a game in this series through three quarters, but the problem is he might average 1 point a game in this series in the fourth quarters. Donovan's challenge. Yep. Go ahead.
Do you think Dallas was doing anything that bothered him? Because he wasn't good against Dallas in really any of the matchups. Was it Dallas specific? Was it just randomness? Four games isn't a lot. You know, maybe those are just four of his worst games. And at least for my eye test, I didn't see anything specifically Dallas was doing that would make him less comfortable. I know in one of those games.
Well, the specific thing is they put DFS on. Yeah. So that's the specific thing. And, you know, from all the way from Donovan's rookie year, you know, the book on him is you got to put length on him, right? So Portland, you know, in years one and years two, they used to put Mo Harkless and Al Farouq Aminu on him. You know, when they got to the Clippers, you know, it was Paul George. Last week against Phoenix, it was Mikal Bridges. And, you know, Donovan, to his credit, you know, he's really good at hunting switches and figuring out where the matchups are. But at the same time, I mean, when you have Dorian Finney-Smith on you for, you know, four games, I mean, that's tough. You know, when you play New Orleans and you have Herb Jones on you, that's difficult. So
I think that's why Dallas is going to try to avoid, you know, again, they will go small if they need to, and they may have to early on because they don't have Luka. But I think they'd rather play blitzing pick and roll coverages, specifically so that Donovan can't go hunt switches. They want to keep their best defenders on Donovan, and they want Donovan to make those passes to an open Rudy Gobert. And they want to stay home on the shooters. They want to play big man. I am pretty sure that they're going to try everything they can to keep Dwight and Maxi and a little bit of Bertans as their main three. They may even put Bertans in with Maxi or Dwight, because I think that's their preference of how to address Utah. The issue in the question, the huge question, and it's been a question to my understanding for months now in Utah, is can Donovan and can Conley make the passes to Gobert that would break that blitzing pick and roll offense? And it does seem like, you know, the passes Donovan wants to make when he gets double teamed out of pick and roll are not the passes to Gobert in the middle of the court. It's the immediate outlet that kind of just resets the offense to Conley, who's up near the half court line.
Well, my question for you is, who takes Luka's spot in the rotation? Now, we know that Spencer Dinwiddie probably makes the start, but who takes the spot in the rotation in the second unit? So who takes Dinwiddie's spot in the second unit?
I think Brunson and Dinwiddie play 41 minutes, 42 minutes. I think that Dallas doesn't have a lot of options. I do think that Frank Ntilikina will get a chance. And Ntilikina is not a playmaker. He's not a shot creator. In fact, you don't want him doing that. And if Utah can get him in situations where Frank Ntilikina is the guy trying to make plays, that's a win for them. But what he is a active, willing shooter. Not amazing, not a great shooter. He's shooting like 34% this year. But he will take threes, and he will take pull-ups, and he will attack a closeout. And honestly, it's probably better if he's pulling up rather than trying to finish at the rim. He's never been able to finish at the rim, and that part of his game hasn't come around this season in Dallas either. But I think Nillikina is the guy who gets a little bit of run, but if he's not effective in his first 4 or 5 minutes, he's the type of guy, like, I think he gets 4 or 5 minutes in the first half of game one. And if he's not effective with them, it might be Dinwiddie and Brunson pretty much the rest of the way out. You might see those wings stay on the floor. You'll see a little bit of Josh Green subbing in for them. You might see Bertans, like kind of the two big man lineups, like I was describing with Maxi and Bertans, or Maxi and Powell. They might be forced into, you know, they prefer having two shot creators on the floor at all times when it's Luka Spencer and Jalen Brunson, but they may just be forced into maxing their minutes as much as they can and hoping to survive when it's just Brunson or just Dinwiddie, just for small stretches.
What sort of defense do you expect them to play on Donovan? I mean, you think that they're going to just conventional pick and roll? Are they going to send two to the ball, try to get the ball out of his hands? I mean,
yeah, I think they'll blitz him, and I think they'll mix in blitzing high, mm-hmm. and they'll mix in more of an ice sideline trap with you know, ice coverage.
So Tony, to counter that, this has got to be a big Rudy Gobert series, right? Offensively.
Well, it's got to be a big Rudy Gobert series, and it might be a big Bojan Bogdanovic series as well, because Bojan hasn't been available in the last few matchups. And if you commit Dorian Finney-Smith to Donovan Mitchell, and let's say you commit and you commit Jalen Brunson to Mike Conley, that means you're committing Spencer Dinwiddie to Bojan Bogdanovic, and I'm not sure that Dinwiddie's big enough for Bogdanovic, especially in that mid post. And you know, I can see the Jazz going to Bogdanovic a lot in terms of that. Or actually, now that I think about it, you can actually commit Reggie Bullock to Bogdanovic, and that's probably a much better matchup. But you know, once Dallas goes small, and they start switching everything, you know, the Jazz have to throw the ball to Rudy Gobert. And if they throw the ball to Rudy Gobert on possession number one and he fumbles it out of bounds, you got to throw the ball to him in possession number two, in possession number three. And you got to keep throwing them the ball, because he'll catch 7 out of those 10 passes. But if you stop throwing him the ball, if he fumbles one or two, then you're playing right into Dallas's hands, and you're not punishing him for going small. And that might be one of the reasons why, you know, like Tim said, you know, you want to try to keep a big on the floor, because not only do you have to keep Gobert from pinning you under the basket, you have to keep him away from the offensive glass as well. So those are things that I think are keys for the Jazz. And
it's a weird version of the same combo we have about Maxi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, Tim, and I just think, no, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, keep going, Tony.
You know, and I just think that resilience offensively over 7 games, if the Jazz show that kind of resilience offensively, then I think it'll eventually be like Novocaine, right? It might not take effect right away, but eventually it'll start taking an effect.
Tim, any chance that we could see Dallas go with Maxi and Dwight Powell as like we have just got to throw our two biggest guys out there, non-Boban biggest guys out there? I mean, you and I, we talked about this earlier this week on 77 Minutes. I said game one maybe is a Boban game. As just here's a wild card, but maybe it's a Maxi and Dwight game, and you just, it's two bigs who are not as big as Rudy, but maybe they can stand on each other and wear a big trench coat.
Would you say Utah kind of plays like Miami?
That's interesting.
Because
a little bit. That's interesting.
The last time Maxi and Dwight were used together effectively was against Miami. It was Dallas's last game before the, or second to last game before the All-Star break. And that pairing was fantastic. That was Maxey's best game of the season, best game in several seasons. He was monstrous defensively. He was incredible. He had like three or four blocks and three or four more just sensational rim contests. He shot like 3 of 8 from three. Had another couple layups. He got, you know, things that just kind of came to him, hit his free throws. I think it's possible. You know, obviously what scares me with that in terms of trying to analyze what would happen is that that's one hesitant shooter and that's one non-shooter. So you're dealing with full Rudy Gobert protecting the paint in that instance. But it's possibly a sacrifice that Dallas is willing to make where they're going to say, we want to turn this into as defensive of a game, of a series, you know, as long as Luka's out, we're going to turn this into as defensive of a slog as possible. And we're going to try to live and die offensively with mid-range. And we think Spencer and we think Jalen Brunson can hit enough mid-rangers and create enough looks for the players around them that we'll be able to survive that way in a 99-95 sort of win or 101 to 93 type of win.
And that's what the Jazz have to, this is what the Jazz have to figure out. Like, it's okay for the Jazz can survive Jalen Brunson going for 25 and Spencer Dinwiddie going for 20. What they can't survive is Jalen Brunson and Spencer Dinwiddie combining for 45, for Reggie Bullock getting 6 threes and Dorian Finney-Smith getting 4 threes and Maxi Kleber and Davis Bertans hitting 3 threes apiece. You know, if the Jazz are going to play that, if they're going to play the drop, then what they need to do is they have to make it a 2-on-2 game and they have to stay home on the shooters. And that's what they haven't, that's what they didn't do against Luka, especially in the last two games of the regular season series. You know, it was Luka dropping 30, but Luka also, you know, dissecting Utah's defense via the pass and, you know, Dallas making a bunch of threes. They got to stay at home on the three-point shooters on the day and they have to be able to trust that, you know, Dallas can't win a game making 50 mid-range jumpers.
That's if I'm Utah, that's exactly what I do. Like exactly what you described. Stay home on shooters and trust that Brunson and Dinwiddie are not good enough as shot creators. They're good. They're going to score some points, but they're not good enough that they can consistently beat Rudy as a dropping, basically guards two players at once sort of defender, and that whichever guard, you know, Conley and O'Neal can do enough on those guys. They can do enough to really make life difficult and just, you know, again, you're going to give up some shots, and Brunson and Dinwiddie in the scenario might score 25 apiece, but if you can get them taking 22 shots, 23 shots to get those 25 points and not concede open threes all around the court in while doing that, I think that's the best way to really frustrate Dallas and really bother them.
Before we wrap up, you guys got any final thoughts on the series? I was gonna have you guys make a prediction at least on game one, but it's a little unpredictable to me. It could go either way legitimately and for various reasons. So I don't want to put you guys in a position to try to make a prediction, but got any closing thoughts here as we wrap up?
The more I think about this, the more I think that Jason Kidd, if he can, he has the ability to outcoach Snyder. I think the world of Snyder, but I think Kidd has been sensational this season with a lot of what he's done. And I think that if we look back at a game one win, or even a couple wins in the first four games without Luka, we're going to look at these games and be like, yeah, Jason Kidd won the coaching battle.
Wow. Tony?
You know, I just think it's going to be a long series. and, you know, with or without Luka, because, you know, I just, you know, honestly, I mean, you know, me and Tim, shameless plug, but me and Tim wrote a preview conversation. You know, Dallas has been one of the best teams in the league in the second half of the year. I mean, since January. And, you know, what they do in terms of their ability to adjust and be versatile and make opponents uncomfortable on both ends of the floor. You know, honestly, they can replicate. They can still replicate a lot of that stuff without Luka. Now, there's the shot making, the ability to bail out possessions, the passing. You know, the passing is a big thing, and the defensive rebounding. They're not going to be able to replicate that. But you know, Jalen Brunson. People don't realize how good he is off the dribble because he plays with Luka. People don't realize how good Spencer Dinwiddie is off the dribble. You know, those two guys can, like Tim said, they can score 25 each through the bulk of this series. So, you know, I just really think that this is going to be, you know, whether Luka plays or not, I think this is going to be a difficult series for the Jazz. And I think that it's going to be a really close series regardless.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to reading both your guys' coverage of the series, seeing the different angles, and of course, doing the podcast with you guys throughout the playoffs. For Tony Jones and for Tim Cato, I'm Dave DeFore. This has been Game Notes on the Athletic Podcast Network. Enjoy the playoffs. Finally here.